welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 257 of the podcast, and it is the 21st of February 2016 as I record this. So apologies for the lack of intro last week. I was struck down by the flu bug that is currently sweeping the UK. It's one of those nasty ones, and it kind of comes back like the bad guy in the horror movie. And yes, I had it for the second time. My husband had it for the third time. I mean, it's apparently it's because we've had this very long, wet, warm winter, and we haven't had the cold snap that apparently kills bugs off in the midwinter. And so what we have is this permanently mutating virus. It really is. I mean, it's one of those things that makes you realize how fragile we are as humans. I literally couldn't speak last weekend, which is why you didn't get an interview, an intro. You got an interview, and many of you have emailed me or left a comment or added on Twitter how much you loved the interview with Adam Croft. There were a couple of comments saying that people missed the introduction. Thank you for that. And one saying they were really pleased with the new shorter format. So the intro is back. And So, and of course, if you don't want the intro, you can always fast forward. But I'm so glad that you found the intro with Adam useful. I'm certainly taking his advice into account with my own Facebook advertising, which continues to be a work in progress. And of course, if I do crack anything, I will be sharing it on the blog, but I'm still in experimentation mode. So this week I have an interview with Tolulope Popula, who is a Nigerian author living in the UK. And there have been a number of reports recently on the lack of diversity in publishing. And I don't think anyone can deny that. You just have to look around at the people working in publishing and also the number of books published by white people for white people. So today I'm really pleased we're able to look at the experience of African authors within the traditional industry, as well as how going indie can help voices that struggle to be heard in other ways. Now, of course, I am a white British woman, privileged to be educated and living in a time when contraception gives women many choices. But the reason I care about this so much is that my family is mixed race. Between five of us siblings, we have Hungarian, Jewish, New Zealand heritage, as well as Canadian, Nigerian, and most recently Afro-Caribbean. And so I am really proud to be part of a multicultural family, and I want to try and raise the profile of multicultural authors. And you know how much I bang on about global sales. Obviously, I want my books to be read in Nigeria, the Caribbean, South America. I want my books to cross the divide. Equally, I want to encourage other authors who are in these other countries to promote their books to markets like me. So I'm actually trying to really challenge my own reading this year and choosing to read other books by more diverse authors and give other voices a chance. I hope that might encourage you as well. And at the end of the interview, I asked Tolu about recommending some African authors whose books may be outside the standard African narrative, which she will talk about, which is really interesting. Those books are listed in the show notes with links as well. So if you do want to try some more diverse reading, then there are some links in the show notes. Also this week, talking about diversity, there was a really brilliant piece on Wired, and I'll link to this in the show notes, about Hausa Muslim women in the north of Nigeria who are writing and self-publishing romances that denounce child marriage, sex trafficking, and slavery in all forms. And it made me very proud to be part of such a movement where voices, emerging voices, who would never be heard within traditional publishing are now being heard through self-publishing. And it just puts things in perspective, I think, for all of us. So yeah, self-publishing is a very exciting thing, both for those authors, you know, who may have had a chance in traditional publishing but now choose to go indie, but also those people who perhaps have no other choice and it's the only way they can be heard. So I'll link to that in the show notes. And continuing the global theme, the Times of India reported this week that Amazon has acquired a 26% stake in the leading publishing house, Westland, upping its presence in Asia's third largest economy. And also they reported that India and China will together emerge as the biggest market for Amazon Kindle e-reader this year, so surpassing the US. So yeah, very exciting. And the Kindle saw a growth rate of over 200% in India in 2015, the highest among the Amazon's biggest markets. So I wanted to there, you know, kind of give another nod to global growth, as it's something I always mention. And I want us to keep an eye on that, as I really believe it is kind of day one all over again in each of these markets. And yeah, I'm super excited about India. Of course, my next book, Destroyer of Worlds, is set in India. So that might have something to do with it. It's a country I love. Okay, in publishing news, I missed last week's announcement, so I'm going to give it again today, which is the author earnings report was out the week before last. And as ever, indies go yay and traditional publishing goes boo. And of course, even if you take some margin of error into account, which is what people always say, it's still the fact that indies are taking market share from Kindle. Quote, the big five now account for less than a quarter of ebook purchases on Amazon, while indies are closing in on 45%. Now, there's also been a bit of argy-bargy with Lee Child, who is an author I love to read and personally admire. He is a funny guy, a good guy. I'm in the International Thriller Writers, which he is the president, co-president, and I like him personally. But he wrote some comments on The Passive Voice criticizing the method used by Author Earnings, and then wrote an article in The Guardian about how Amazon shouldn't be allowed to create physical bookstores. What was kind of ironic about the article is he used The Martian as an example of why print still dominates, which is ironic because The Martian was an indie self-published book that became an audiobook and then got a film deal and then a print deal. So actually The Martian is an indie success story. Joe Conrath has joined in against Lee Child. But, you know, to be honest, I don't think there's any need for all the argy-bargy. I'm kind of the mind that the best thing to do as an indie is, you know, a bit like people who have a particular faith, it's best not to preach about it. It's best to live it and live an indie life, be generous and, you know, write what you want to write, put your books out there, be ethical and demonstrate by our behaviour that going indie is a valid choice for any creative. It's not an us versus them type of argument. So yeah, it's always nice to see success, but equally I think, you know, today's show is all about celebrating the voices that will never be heard in the same way that Lee Child will be heard. So there you go. Okay, so personal news. Apart from being sick, I did finish the first draft of Destroyer of Worlds, which was quite a feat in the end. I've also managed to do the first hand edit. So when I finish a first draft, I print out the whole book and I edit by hand. So right now I have on my desk here a couple of hundred pages of my novel, and it's covered in scribbles. So I now have to turn those scribbles back into Scrivener and fill in the blanks. There's a couple of scenes that I need to write, and I need to do all the line edits, and then I will print again before I and edit again before I send to my editor, Jen. So I do at least two full hand edits before I send off to Jen. I'm definitely behind because of the sickness, so I have moved my pre-order to the 21st of April. And I feel a lot better about that, to be honest. I don't ever want to rush books. It's so important that the quality is so high. So anyway, pleased about that. But it's also really, it's always really nice to have a printout of the book because it becomes a lot more real. And yeah, good news is it's not that bad. And of course, we always, you know, have these struggle with these feelings of, about our books. And sometimes you read your own writing and go, hey, you know, that's pretty good. And other times you read it and you go, oh my goodness, I just should never write again. But that's natural. That's what creatives feel about their work. So such is life. So talking of Scrivener, I'm doing a webinar with Joseph Michael, the Scrivener coach, and we'll be going through how to use Scrivener to write, organize, and export your book into various formats for printing, editing, and publishing. That will be on Thursday, 3rd of March at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And as ever, if you register, you'll get the replay. And I always learn new tricks from Joe in this webinar. It's a really good excuse for me to revisit how I use Scrivener. And every time I add a new trick into my own process. And I've been learning from Joe for a number of years now. And still, you know, it's all incremental. We never have to go from zero to 100, you know, in one step. It's all incremental. So whether you're just starting out with Scrivener, or if you're, you just want to see what it does, or if you're a reasonably advanced Scrivener user like myself, I still think you'll find the webinar useful. You can sign up at thecreativepen.com/March webinar. So as in the webinar in March. So thecreativepen.com/March webinar. And yeah, so that's Thursday, 3rd of March. Actually have been quite busy because I also did a 2-day screenwriting course in London with a load of crime novelists on adaptation. It was fantastic actually. And a penny dropped for me around screenplays. I've tried, you know, I've been to a lot of courses on screenplays. I've been trying to come up with a way that I wanted the penny to drop, and finally it did. It's a bit like the dictation thing. I feel like the penny's dropped on that, and so I am adding writing a screenplay to my list of creative projects in 2016. And I bought Final Draft, which is the software, the industry standard software, and actually I think if you use Scrivener, Final Draft is a lot simpler. So I'm really impressed with that and looking forward to doing a screenplay. Still not sure, it will either be One Day in Budapest or Deviance. It will be one of those two. Also, just a reminder, as we head into March in the next week, which is kind of scary, isn't it? Yes, I'm just checking. Oh, it's a leap year, so we have one more Monday in February and then it's March. But I will be speaking at the Smarter Artist Summit in Austin, Texas at the end of March alongside the boys from the self-publishing podcast, Nick Stevenson, and a whole load of other people. And it will also be packed with business-minded indies, I guess. So you can check that out at smarterartistsummit.com. Okay, so here's what you've sent me in the last few weeks. I'm only going to read a few because I'm 2 weeks in. I have quite a lot of them. Thank you as ever for all the pictures you send me and the tweets and the emails and the comments. I really appreciate them. It makes me feel like this is more of a conversation, and I appreciate that a lot. Noemi from Belgium says, happily enjoying your podcast while walking on my midday break at work. Sent me a lovely picture of the countryside. Sarah Rosette, not driving this week, enjoyed the conversation about research and writing, sent me picture of pizza. Edwin Downward, decided I would listen to the Creative Pen today so I could post this 6 month supply of hay for the bunny hoard, and sent me a picture of a bale of hay. It's always interesting what people are doing while listening to the show, isn't it? Gabrielle Garbin says, your podcast and books changed me from a hobby writer to a serious writer, and love the thrillers. Thank you, Gabrielle. And I really appreciate hearing from people whose writing life has been changed by something I've put into the world. It means a lot. And actually, this week I had there were some tweets from a guy called Evan Pickering. He's a guy I met at Thrillerfest a couple of years ago. And I was really pleased to hear from him because he'd finally put out his book as a self-published author. And of course, I hadn't given him a second thought after a very brief conversation at the bookstore at Thrillerfest. And, even just a few words can sometimes make a big difference to people. So again, I would urge all of you, if you're proud of being indie and you talk about it to people, you just never know how it will affect people's lives, and also encouraging people's creativity. It's amazing how much people are kind of beaten down as creatives. And I think anything we can say to help build each other up is a good idea. Joel Mark Harris sent me a picture of the lovely phantom playing in the laundry. Cute cat picture. Very nice. Breaking news series said, working on our covers for the series while listening to the podcasts, and a picture of animation on screen, which is awesome. Kate Rada says, been watching your podcast for 3 hours and I've learned so much. Lindsay Barocca and Honoré are at the gym again, and I'm clearly responsible for all you fit authors out there. Frau Genau says, listening as the sun rises over New South Wales, I presume, to make time go by faster on the long journey home to Hong Kong. Photo out the plane window. Anita Renahan says, 500 words a day since January the 1st. Not bad for a working mum and wife. Thank you for sharing goals on your podcast. No worries, Anita. Good going. You will have you'll have a novel by the end of the year. Well done. Monica Rodriguez, clouds left from a stormy day while driving home and listening to the podcast. I love a cloudy day. Well, I love a stormy day, actually. I much prefer a storm to a cloud. Sarah General says, pretty much addicted to listening to the podcast in the morning as I get ready for work. They are so informative and inspiring. Super duper. Jason Underwood, thank you for putting out the most usable and relevant information for beginning authors. Love the podcast and the blog. I'm really pleased you said that, Jason, because I try and make sure there's information for the kind of graduate level. But I'm really glad that as a beginning author, you're also finding things useful. And I really should finish this up. So Alison Bueller, binge listening to the podcast to distract me from juice fast hunger. Yes, that is super. And finally, Scott King says, I saved last week's episode to listen to while exploring the Lafayette Cemetery in New Orleans, which is fantastic and totally on my list, Scott. So thank you for that, everybody. And actually today, this podcast episode is sponsored by you guys. So no ad read at all. Today, it's sponsored by all of you supporting the show on Patreon. I'm really appreciating your support. And thanks especially to new patrons over the last couple of weeks, Claire Mendenhall, Natasha Boyd, Bill Kokas, Kitty Murray, Noelle Baudin, L. Casey, and Liz Madrid. Thank you to all those new patrons, and to you if you are supporting the show on Patreon, or of course, if you're supporting the show by buying my books and courses and all of that, which is brilliant. I will also be putting out the Patreon only Q&A this week. Now my voice is back. That will be happening. And if you do support the show on Patreon, you'll get the extra Q&A recordings, and you'll also get all the monthly recordings done so far. I think there's about 4 months so far. I really do appreciate the Patreon support, like the tweets and emails. It really demonstrates that people enjoy the show and want it to continue. So on Patreon, you can support the show with just a few dollars, even just $1 per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month. So less than a coffee a month, and you'll get that extra monthly Q&A audio. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Thank you. And here is the interview. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Tolu Lope Popula. Hi Tolu.
Hi Joanna, thank you so much for having me on your podcast today.
Oh no, I'm super excited. So Tolu is the author of flash fiction, romance and short stories. She's a publishing consultant and coach, and she is Nigerian but lives in London. And we're talking generally about Nigeria and African publishing today, which I'm super excited about. So just start, Tolu, by telling us a bit more about you and your writing background.
Okay, well, I started writing a long time ago, right from when I was 6 years old. That's my earliest memories of writing. So it's always been something I've been drawn to, something I've been interested in. And I love reading as well. So I was that typical bookworm child that stayed in one corner reading whilst everyone else was going out and doing other things. But yeah, so reading and writing naturally just came to me. And as I grew up, I kept diaries and journals. And, you know, it was just something I did. And it didn't occur to me that I could make it a career until much, much later. You know, I went to school, studied accounting, economics and other business related courses. And it wasn't until like 2006. And then I started getting really frustrated with my job and so on. And then I started thinking, well, what can I do to actually enjoy my job? What can I do that would make me happy to get up in the morning? Because I was dreading going to work. And, you know, so I started a blog. And then I started writing in it, just general stuff initially. And then as time went on, I realized, oh, I could do this. So I started writing short stories and flash fiction. And I started getting, great feedback from people who read my work. And they thought it was good. They thought it was really nice. And I always got great feedback. So I thought, okay, let me see if I actually go into a writing class. Maybe I'll get, you know, proper criticism, proper feedback from people who do this for a living. So I signed up for a writing class, which was fun. I met other aspiring authors like me. It was great to get feedback from a tutor, you know, and so on. So that encouraged me to keep going. And then, in 2008, I think it was, I started this online fiction series. I just told a couple of other writers or other bloggers I knew that, oh, what if we start this fun series, just something we do once a week? And it kind of grew and grew, and we did that for 2 years. So every week, somebody would like write an update based on a character and based on a storyline. And that took off, and it was very popular. So after doing that for 2 years, then I thought, okay, next thing to do is to write a novel. So I tackled that one. So I spent a bit of time writing a novel. And then that was never published, though, because I think I just used that as my practice. And then so the second one, I decided, okay, I was going to take some characters that I'd created for the series, the online series we did, and create a new novel around them. So I did that, and then I was trying to get it published, and got lots of rejections. Not because the writing was bad or anything, but a lot of publishers said, oh, it's ethnic fiction. And I was thinking, what is ethnic fiction? And they said, oh, it's not mainstream fiction. It's not what the mainstream UK reader is looking to read. And I thought, okay, fine, well, I'll publish it myself then. So I started researching into the whole publishing industry, how does publishing actually work, and so on. And I thought, there's a lot of inefficiencies in traditional publishing. And I think, you know, the fact that I have the ability or the choice to even try and do my own publishing is good. Why don't I take it? So I decided to publish my novel myself. And that it came out in 2012, and it got good reviews. So I was like, yeah, I did it, you know. You know, it made me realize that, you know, you don't always have to wait for somebody to pick you. You can pick yourself, you know, and publish yourself, do your own stuff. And because of that, some of my other friends who are also African writers like me but couldn't get through to mainstream publishing thought, okay, if you can do your book, and why don't you do my book? so that's how I kind of became a publisher. Started helping some of my other friends to get published as well. So that's my story in a nutshell.
That's
why I do what I do now. Yeah.
It's great, actually, and I'm kind of smiling. The phrase ethnic fiction is awful. It's really a terrible phrase because, I mean, a lot of the listeners are not from the UK, but can you talk a little bit about Nigerians and the UK? And, you know, like, as if in my experience, because my sister-in-law is Nigerian, you know, there are a lot of Nigerians in England. You all speak amazing English. You're all incredibly educated. When did you move over here, and you know, what is the situation like with Nigeria and the UK? Why are we so close?
I moved over to England in 2000, so that was like nearly 16 years ago now. But I came over initially to get a degree. So I finished secondary school and college in Nigeria, and my parents thought, okay, they wanted me to get a bit more exposure and a bit more international education. So they said, okay, you go over to the UK and get a degree. So I did that and then got my master's degree and then decided to start working and basically just stayed around for a while and then got married and got settled. So, but I think Nigeria and UK have always had history. I mean, going back way back to when the British came over to colonize Nigeria, you know, so we our history is intertwined. The queen was our queen for a long time and so on. It was only just about 50 years ago that Nigeria got independent, so that we still have traces of the British influence in our culture, you know, even the language, the way we speak, the way we write, a lot of it is derived from the past, the history we have with Britain. So a lot of Nigerians do come over to England because it's familiar, you know, the language is familiar, the culture is familiar, the history is familiar. And when we come over, it's not too much of a culture shock as opposed to if you move to somewhere like France, for example. Mm. Yeah. So I think that's part of it. And then we have a lot of people who are like second generation Nigerians now. So their parents left Nigeria a long time ago. And they've settled in England, so the children basically only know England as home now.
Yeah, exactly, which is why it's quite funny calling it ethnic fiction when there's so many, you know, so many people are just as British as anyone else. But I wanted to ask you about Nigeria as, you know, let's think about it as now a publishing, you know, area. Africa as a, you know, publishing, which is quite broad, I know. But you, I mean, obviously there are people in companies in Africa publishing African fiction, but how would you describe you know, the way publishing, traditional publishing, is in Africa and Nigeria specifically?
Well, I wouldn't know much about other countries, but in Nigeria specifically there are very few traditional publishing houses. A lot of them don't publish fiction as much as non-fiction, because the market is mainly for non-fiction, like business books, religious books, educational texts, and maybe things like memoirs and biographies. So fiction publishing is still a very small part of what we publish in Nigeria, but is becoming better now. The main problem that most fiction authors have is piracy. So they submit their work to a publisher and somehow it gets leaked out. And then, you know, some other printing companies just print like cheaper versions of it and sell it on, you know, in a secondhand market, or, you know, it maybe just down the road, you know, and stuff like that. So that's the main problem we have with traditional publishing in Nigeria. Yes, distribution is still a problem because we don't have as many organized distributors in Nigeria as they do in the UK. So like print publishing has that issue, where you don't have a wide network of bookstores that are just, you know, ready and available for you to get your books across to.
And so I told you before by email that I'm really interested in this. I've sold some books in Nigeria, and I have an advanced reader there, and he was telling me about the problems with Kindle. He does read on some DRM-free ebook devices, but how do, apart from print, obviously, how are people reading in a digital format in Nigeria?
Yes, a lot of people use smartphones now, and tablets are also becoming very popular. So people have access to reading apps and digital libraries. So, and then we have some local ones as well. So there are reading apps like Okada Books, where readers can download ebooks directly onto their mobile phones and their tablets. There are ebook platforms such as Digital Backbooks, there's Sign-On Books, and you know, and online, some online stores. But the main issue is they're not as big platforms as Amazon, and a lot of Nigerians cannot access Amazon. A lot of Nigerians based in Nigeria cannot access Amazon because Amazon still requires you to have either a UK or US account, or basically you have to have a foreign card to purchase books and stuff. So that's a big hindrance. So in terms of self-publishing, many Nigerian authors cannot self-publish on the Kindle platform. And I had this problem recently with two of my clients because I published their books in paperback, but when we tried to publish it on the Kindle, it wouldn't accept their bank details. So I had to use my own bank details for them and try and get the money, you know, their royalties across to them as they come in. Yeah.
What about using Smashwords or Drafter Digital for some of the platforms because they pay by PayPal?
Yeah, Smashwords is fine. But if they were going to go with KDP Select, then they can't use Smashwords. So that was the problem some of my clients were facing, where they wanted to be in KDP Select for a while, but they could, you know, and then it worked out like, well, it wasn't worth it because you couldn't get your reader to download books from KDP Select, and you also couldn't get paid from from Amazon Kindle platform, so it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. But obviously, so there are people who want to read ebooks, there are people who want to publish ebooks. I think of Nigeria. I mean, obviously, Nigeria is one of the strongest economies in Africa, and a lot of people are very entrepreneurial. So, are you and other authors kind of petitioning for things to change, or do you think that things are going to change?
Yes, I mean, there was a petition some time ago when Amazon set up Amazon India, you know, and everyone was like, oh, they set up Amazon India, so maybe Nigeria is not too far off. Maybe, hopefully, we can get our own version of Amazon where we can actually transact in our own local currency, but it never happened. And I think Amazon was maybe, I don't know, maybe they're still a bit wary about Nigeria, so they haven't set up any way for us to transact in our own local currency just yet. So I don't know how we can solve that problem.
Yeah, you're becoming a publisher, so that's how you're solving it. But just back on the devices, what types of cell phones, smartphones, do people use?
Most people use like the usual cell phones, like the ones where you can have access to the app stores. So most people have Android phones. Not necessarily like the Samsung or anything, but basically Android phones where you can access the Play Store and get download books. So, for example, I have an app on my phone called Okada Books, which is made by a company based in Nigeria, and readers can upload their books. Authors can upload their books in EPUB format onto the app, and readers can download it onto their phones. So that works very well for like local publishing and local content.
Sorry, can you spell that for me?
Okada Books. So
Okada Books. Okay. Yeah. Because you know, we have Okado, the shop, the grocery. I was like, what? Okado's doing books?
So the
people can read books there. I mean, obviously they can buy print. But how do you Nigerians discover books? So, you know, how do authors do marketing?
We use social media mostly. We use word of mouth, and there's this new book festival that's come up now and it's becoming really popular. So that once a year, most authors go there and showcase their books. So we use Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Goodreads. I use Goodreads a lot. And I think a lot Some younger people use Instagram, but I personally don't. I personally discover books through social media channels and African literary blogs. So blogs like Brittle Paper. I don't know if you've heard of Brittle Paper. It's curated by a popular blogger called Ainehi, and she curates stories and interviews and really interesting clips about African literature from all around the world. There's Bookshy. She gives, she reads a lot of African literature, and she writes reviews and interviews African authors. And there's Kina Reads. So basically, she does the same thing. She reviews African books, and she does like a yearly challenge for how many African books you can read this year. So yeah, those are the blogs I read to discover new authors.
No, that's awesome. And what, I mean, you mentioned that there's a lot of nonfiction read, you know, in Nigeria and Africa in general. Yeah. What genres do people like to read?
In fiction, I think romance is definitely a favorite. Then some people read thrillers as well. Sci-fi and fantasy are coming up as well as, you know, interesting genres that are becoming popular, and even erotica is coming up now as an interesting genre because people have access to apps that they can read discreetly, you know, so they can read discreetly on their phones or on their tablets. So I think that genre is coming up as well.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, no one's any different from country to country.
No, I think if the story is interesting, it kind of spreads. So people just recommend it to their friends, and you know that's.
And I mean, is there a? I mean, obviously in the US, there's a big African American subgenre in, you know, in romance, for example. Is that are people more interested in that type of subgenre, or is it very wide?
I think it's very wide. Nigerians read widely. We read a lot of foreign authors because for a long time we didn't have writers actually writing our own stories. So we kind of grew up on a diet of foreign authors. But now I think now there are more Nigerian writers who are writing for the Nigerian audience now. So we still read widely. I mean, I could pick up any chick lit or romance novel and it wouldn't matter to me that it wasn't written by a Nigerian or it wasn't written in my niche or anything like that.
Okay, so what about the attitude towards traditional publishing versus self-publishing amongst Nigerian authors? Because in Britain, you know, it's pretty, people are still quite snobbish about traditional publishing. Is that different because of the sort of comments about ethnic fiction and stuff like that?
I think self-publishing still has a funny reputation among Nigerians. It still has this stigma. I know it's getting better now, but it's still seen as something desperate people do, probably because they've tried every other way to get published and they failed. But, you know, there are very few publishing houses in Nigeria, like I said, so self-publishing is almost like the only other option. The problem with the stigma is because true self-publishing is difficult because the cost of production is high and, you know, that's almost out of the reach for the average Nigerian. I mean, by the time you add up costs, things like editing, cover design, and, you know, printing, it becomes very expensive. So most people just go to vanity presses, and they don't care so much about the quality of the content or the quality of the book. So that's why self-publishing still has a stigma attached to it. But I think it's becoming better now. There are a few self-publishing companies that are thinking about quality now, not just getting your work out there, regardless of what it looks like or how it's written.
Mm.
So it's getting better now, but it still has a stigma.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you know, I look at it as you know, the UK was probably is a couple of years behind the US in terms of the adoption of digital and, you know, the change in stigma. And how many years do you think it will be before things have really changed in Nigeria?
Oh, I don't know, maybe 10 years.
Oh, really, that long?
Yeah, because I mean, for you to say self-publishing is acceptable and, well, mainstream now, it will take a while because the infrastructure is not there. We don't have print on demand, for example. We don't have that yet in Nigeria. So the most people who self-publish are stuck with either just, you know, printing lots and lots of books and storing it at home, or they just publish on a digital format and they never get readers. So there's still a lot of infrastructural problems we have to work on.
Mm. Yeah, so okay, so that sounds, it does sound kind of 10 years. It makes me think of Australia in 2006, which is when I first started self-publishing in Australia. And, you know, my choice was at the time to print books and store them in my garage. So, but what I love about this and you know, what I always harp on about on the podcast is, you know, it doesn't matter if it's 5 years, if it's 10 years, you and I will still be writing and this readership will grow. And I believe that people will read more on their cell phones, and it's a big market, isn't it? How many Nigerians speak English? So, like, what would be the percentage of the population who speak English and read English?
I'll say maybe like 60 to 70%. Most people who have been through any education, they've been taught in English, so we learn how to speak, how to read, and how to write English from a very young age.
Yeah, so it's a big market. What's the population of Nigeria, just so people know?
Well, it varies a lot, but anywhere between 8 to 11 million people. So, you know, you hear about 110 million people, or you hear about 80 million people. But yeah, I'm sure if you wanted to get an exact figure, we can just check on Wikipedia.
Yeah, exactly. But I'd like people to kind of realise that this is a very big English-speaking, educated market and a very strong economy. So, you know, to me, it feels like, you know, if we take South Africa kind of separately, but, you know, of African countries, I would think that Nigeria is going to be the first to really get into this.
Yeah, Nigeria is a big, very big market, and it does have a lot of potential. We're just not there yet, definitely not on the scale of the UK or US.
Yeah, but you and I, we're at the forefront.
Yes. the forefront.
So I'm interested, so you hosted an event in London for African authors last year, and we all know there are diversity issues in publishing. I think there was a report about British publishing that it was some ridiculous percentage as just white women kind of running the publishing industry. Yeah. So what are your community of African authors concerned about, and, you know, what can we do about these diversity issues?
Okay, the main problems that we highlighted at the event, one of the main problems was the categorization of African literature as if it's just one generic genre, and there's only one type of African writer. So I hear like awful stories from my friends who try to publish with mainstream publishing houses, and they're told maybe, for example, oh, we already have one black author on our book, so we can't possibly take another one.
Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, we recently published one book about India. We can't publish another book about Africa just yet.
Oh.
Or, you know, is your work similar to, you know, insert famous black author? So
I find it so, and it annoys me that the kind of the well-known, in quotation marks, African authors are all literary fiction, aren't they?
Yeah. So unless you write exactly like Chimamanda Adichie or maybe Ben Okri or something like that, you don't have a chance at getting into mainstream publishing. Well, that's the view anyway. That's the experience of many writers that I know.
Yeah, and so what were the ideas that you all came up with? That, you know, are there ways that, you know, that I can help, that the listeners can help? You know, how can we change that perception?
Well, I think it starts with the publishers, people who bring these books to market. We've heard of the danger of the single story. That publishers only want to read, or they only want to publish set one kind of story about Africa. So the stories that depict things like war and poverty and rape and AIDS and, you know, dysfunctional families and such things, that publishers don't want to publish happy stories of Africans, for example, or they don't want to publish, you know, a story about young contemporary people living in a city and just going about their normal lives and, you know, maybe finding love and so on. That we only want to, they only encourage stories that are really gory and, you know, really sad and depressing. So, that really gets to me, actually, because I started out writing happy stories, and a lot of people told me, oh, you never get published because nobody writes like that. If you want to get on Oprah's book club, you have to write depressing stories. If you want to win the Booker Prize, you have to write a depressing story, you know. you will never get anywhere with mainstream publishing if you write happy stories of normal everyday Africans. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to just write them anyway because that's my own narrative. I don't have to write a story about war just to get recognition, you know. Mm. I don't have to write a story about, you know, a poor dysfunctional family just because that's what is selling in the market. So I think publishers need to welcome and appreciate different kinds of stories. And then readers as well. You know, when you go to writing events or things like that, you have to ask people, oh, do you only write or do you only publish this kind of fiction? What about this other fiction, you know? It basically starts with the people, the gatekeepers, you know, the people who don't publish the other kinds of stories. They only want to keep repeating one story. I think they are a bit risk averse because they know that, okay, one story has sold or one story did well, one story got nominated for a prize. So let's keep publishing that kind of story.
Yeah, which is ridiculous because, you know, my goal is not to win a literary prize and you write romance and flash fiction. You're not aiming to win a literary prize, are you?
Either. No, not really, no.
That, you know, we actually are more interested in popular fiction that people want to read.
Yeah.
As you say, happy books. I mean, the romance is classic. You know, people want to read something happy. So I get exactly what you're saying and it really annoys me. And I'm kind of hoping that self-publishing will be the way that, you know, Nigerian authors break out, because what's happened in romance and erotica, like E.L. James, the classic, you know, until E.L. James there was no mainstream erotica. It was on the fringes. So what we need is a breakout Nigerian success, clearly.
Yes
in the romance niche.
Yeah, one to pave the way for so many others, because I think once publishers see that readers are actually buying these books and, you know, buying stories that are different from the old narrative, then that might encourage them to publish more.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I don't want to read any more miserable African literary fiction.
I know, right? I know. Even I got fed up of them. And, you know, I was discussing with a couple of my friends at the South Bank Center. We went to a writing event and the same story came up, that why is it the same single narrative? Why is it that if you want to get attention, you have to write a story about war? Can we just write something simple and, you know, straightforward and happy? And that's why I decided actually I was going to create that online series, because it was just going to be about four young African ladies living in London and their lives, and we're just going to follow them and see what happens. And that was why it was a success, because for a lot of people they said, oh, I've never actually read African stories that are this innocent, you know, that don't have a bigger agenda.
Yeah, exactly. I think you also got to get Idris Elba or somebody to take it to Parliament. If people don't know, Idris Elba's a, you know, big British black actor and was in Parliament in the last week or so talking about the problem of lack of diversity across culture.
Across films and, you know, and so on, yeah.
In general, and he's, you know, he's awesome. But no, I think it's really interesting. So then can you recommend some genre books or some of your favorite African novels that are not literary fiction? And I will put in the show notes I'll put links to these, so
definitely recommend some to you. There's Nnedi Okorafor. She's an American, well, she's Nigerian American, and she writes fantasy and sci-fi, so I can definitely recommend her books. Kiru Taye she's British Nigerian. She lives in the UK. She writes sizzling romance novels. Tade Thompson, he is based in the UK as well. He writes crime and speculative fiction. There's Nuzo Ono, she writes African horror, which is interesting.
Oh, awesome. I want to read that.
Yes. I'll send you all the links, and they're on Amazon as well. And there's Obinna Odenwe, who's recently published a very interesting Nigerian thriller. So I can recommend those.
Oh, is that Satans and Shaitans?
Yes.
I just got that.
Yeah, you saw it. Yeah, that's cool.
No, that's fantastic. So I will put those links in the show notes in case people didn't get the names. And then I want to ask you about names, because I think this is partly the problem. And it shouldn't be a problem because it's ridiculous. But I do also get authors emailing me, often Indian authors or African authors, or, you know, people whose names can be difficult to pronounce by white people. basically. And does that then become a problem? So what do you recommend to authors who have difficult to pronounce names? You know, should they just embrace it, or what do you recommend?
In my opinion, I don't think it matters. I think if your book is good, if your story is good, if your writing is excellent, then you should put your name on it. That's your name and that's your identity. If your books are getting great reviews, then it shouldn't matter if you don't have an English name. I don't know if having a non-English name has been a hindrance to me or not. And most of the writers I know, most of the contemporary African writers I know, are using their real names on their books. So personally, I think it shouldn't be a problem. I think you'll find your audience and you'll find people who love your books, regardless of, you know, if they can't pronounce your name. I don't think it's a big issue, personally.
Oh,
I'm
good.
Sure people like Kiran Desai or, you know, Khalid Hossein or, you know, popular authors like that, I don't think they have to worry about whether their name sounds English or not.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, one of my favourite authors, James Rollins, his name is not James Rollins. It's something like it's sort of a Polish Czukowski or something like that, that he specifically made easier to say or read out loud, and also to have a URL, you know, a website under that name, which I don't think it's just, you know, African names or Indian names. I think it's in general. So, for example, the fiction name I use, J.F. Penn, I wouldn't have used it if I had said it out loud a lot, because people think it's S for sugar, but it's F for Francis. So it can be, I think it can be an issue, but I totally agree with you. I think it's ridiculous for people to want to anglicize names. And I think it's also that the market will change. And as you say, you'll find your readership in a different way. So that's, you know, that's fantastic. Is there anything else that the African authors talked about that you'd like to share, or anything that, you know, people might want to know about?
Well, I think in terms of marketing, that's the only other problem we have, marketing and finding our audience. Because like when I was promoting my novel, I actually had to go into places like hair salons and African shops just to get my target market, really. And so when you go to the typical book fairs and things like that, you don't get a big section for Black fiction at all. I mean, maybe a little section for Caribbean fiction, and then you get zero for African fiction. And I think we just need to promote that, the fact that there are other people writing different stories. You know, we don't all read the same stories. We don't all have the same experiences. And I think literature in general will be richer if we embrace more diversity.
Yeah, I agree. I should say, and I think this is a good thing, I found Satans and Shaitans in the normal crime fiction section in Waterstones.
Oh, that's awesome. Then.
Yeah, so it was not in an African section. And I picked it up because the cover is awesome. And I put it on Twitter, and I tweeted the author and said, you know, fantastic cover. This is brilliant. So I guess that's a good thing. There was obviously only one copy, as there are for many books. But that's what you want, isn't it? You want African fiction to just be in
normal categories. It doesn't have to be pushed aside into a very small corner and just generic types, or just saying African or world literature, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. ethnic fiction, as we say.
Yeah, I know.
Which is crazy. That's really offensive. Okay, so you offer consulting for self-publishing authors. What are the types of things that you help people with in your business now?
I help people like with all kinds of writing and publishing questions. So people come to me and say, how are you able to do this? How are you able to start writing? How are you able to even start your own publishing company? How are you able to, you know, get your books on Amazon and things like that? So lots of people come to me with questions, and most of my clients are new writers who are feeling overwhelmed about the process. So they have many questions, or they're dealing with self-doubt and feeling vulnerable about exposing their thoughts, you know, just the whole process of becoming a new author. So I help them by providing helpful answers to their questions. I give them the encouragement they need to move past the fears and the blocks that are stopping them from actually doing what they want to do. And then for coaching, I work alongside them to plan, to structure, and to help them write their books.
Which is fantastic. And everyone can relate to the overwhelm. I think that's...
For me, I went through like a whole year of that overwhelm when I was trying to switch career paths. So I know how it feels. It was good for me to have mentors and people I could call on and speak to, and they could help me, or you just give me advice, or just tell me, oh, don't worry, everything will be fine. You know, just somebody to have a listening ear to show you that you're not alone and people have been through this.
That's fantastic. And I was going to ask you, do they have, book festivals in Nigeria already?
Yes, there's one that is becoming very popular now. It's called the Arcade Book and Art Festival. And I think it's in its third or fourth year now. And it's grown bigger and bigger as time goes on. There's another one, the Lagos Book Festival. I think I'll find you the links as well to those, and you can check them out.
And I think, you know, as we do at the London Book Fair and BEA, start having a sort of self-published authors fringe, where authors can meet each other. These places are not just for publishers and readers. I think they become a sort of author hub over time. So that's good. Well, look, it's been so good to talk to you. So where can people find you and your books online?
Okay, all my books are on Amazon, and you can find my work on accomplishpress.com.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for your time, Tolly. That was great.
Thank you very much for having me, Joanna. It's been great speaking with you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.